I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to sit down again with Indiana Representative Christina Hale to talk about Indiana's dismal record in regard to preventing teen sexual assault. A recent study revealed that 17.3% of teenage girls in Indiana report that they have been sexually assaulted. That's the second highest number in the nation. Hale has prodded state government to deal with the problem. We'll talk about where those efforts stand and what still needs to be done. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the statehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today, it's sort of an updating of a previous show, when we talked about Indiana's dismal record when it comes to preventing teen sexual assault. As I said in the introduction, 17.3% of teenage girls in Indiana in a recent study revealed that or reported that they had been victims of a sexual assault. We did a show on this about this time last year with our guest today, Representative Christina Hale, who's a Democrat from Indianapolis, state representative Christina Hale, and she's back to bring us up to date on where those efforts have led. If you'd like to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Representative Hale, welcome back to the program. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, when we last talked in this forum, you'd introduced a bill, actually a fairly innocuous first step. It was just calling for a study commission so we could start looking at ways that the state might address this problem. And even that, at that time, had gotten stalled. It hadn't made it out of the House side. Since then, there has been some progress. Could you talk a little bit about what happened following our conversation about this time last year?
Sure. That was just prior to my bill's resurrection, actually. Shortly after I was here, it just died. And the reason why this is so important is that, as mentioned, 1 in 6 girls in Indiana, by the time they're in high school, have been raped or sexually assaulted, and an untold number of boys. But we know from data from the criminal justice system that we have a terrible problem among boys in Indiana as well. And in fact, those crimes are even underreported to a greater degree than they are for girls. But that's a big number. It's a big crime. So when I say raped or sexually assaulted, that's for the Centers for Disease Control, their definition of rape. And in fact, in Indiana, our definition of rape just changed as of July 1st. So prior to that date, that crime could only be committed between a male and a female, for example. So, but it also incorporates issues that range from incest to child seduction to date rape to random acts of violence, all these different things. So in order for us to be good stewards of tax dollars and to efficiently, effectively address this problem, we need to know more. So that's what the study was designed to do. And it was just about to die when I was able to partner with State Senator Jim Merritt, who helped to resurrect this. And as part of his lifeline bill, we amended that to approve that bill, which originally was for young kids who had been at a party, been drinking, something awful happened, someone hits their head, they've had way too much to drink, they're in danger, that the children there are indemnified from any sort of legal ramifications for their drinking. Still might get in trouble with school or mom and dad, but legal ramifications, they're all cool. Well, we want to encourage them to report. Well, a lot of times sexual assaults happen at these drinking parties among young people as well. So we amended the bill to allow for students there to be, young people, to be indemnified from the alcohol offenses if they report an assault. But the conversation also really emphasized how important it is that we know so much more about what's going on. And it was through his efforts that we were able to include this in his legislation and get it passed. And through partnership with Senator Merritt, we've now been able also to secure a grant from the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute to pay for phase one of the study, which has been in the field over the past year. So we're beginning to get initial results. We just presented to the Indiana Commission on the Status of Children in mid-February, and we're beginning to wrap our minds around what this might mean in Indiana, that huge, terrifying number, 1 in 6 girls. What does that mean, and what information can we extrapolate to really make strides to begin to fix this problem, prevent these crimes from occurring, and to connect victims with the services that they need so that they are reporting, and when they report, they're taken care of.
In terms of the study, what things specifically are we looking for? You know, when you do a study, there are generally certain questions you're attempting to answer as part of it.
That's correct. And part of the study has a survey component. Mm-hmm. Part of it is focus groups. It's being directed by Dr. John Parrish Sproul, who is the co-founder of the IUPUI School of Global Public Health Communications. So we are taking a communications approach, but also mashing that up with the question of public health and safety at the same time. So we're asking a series of questions, but it's not only the questions we're asking to drill down on. Is our problem date rape? Is it incest? What are the problems in Indiana, and where are they? Because the study will result in some really detailed GIS mapping so that we can see in Indiana where the problems are.
Whether we have a bigger problem in southern Indiana as opposed to northern Indiana or central Indiana.
And do we have a terrible problem of incest in one area and date rape in another, or, you know, what that might be? But also looking at the life world of these young people. So if we want to discover why they're not reporting and what's going on, we need to not just be talking to victims. We need to be talking to perpetrators. We need to be talking to people in victims' lives, teachers, people at their churches and their communities and their neighborhoods, so that we get that fully faceted look at what this really means, because sometimes you can ask the questions and not get the right answers also because it's such a difficult thing to talk about.
We are talking about teen sexual assault. Indiana has some horrible numbers in that regard, where we've got the second worst problem in the nation. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, now that we know what we're looking for and that study is in place, have we started thinking about what we might be able to do about this? And I'm going to preface this by saying that I've talked to a lot of prosecutors, other law enforcement officials, and they hate sex crimes in general, not just because they detest the offense involved, but because they're very difficult to deal with from a law enforcement perspective. You know, the evidence is often contradictory. Almost inevitably, there are only two people who can serve as witnesses, and they contradict each other often. So how can we go about, from a public policy point of view, dealing with what is, I think everyone agrees, is a horrendous problem?
I think as we discover what kinds of crimes we're really dealing with and why is happy, wholesome Indiana so awful in this regard, we're going to have better answers and we'll be able to better respond. For example, if we needed to develop some kind of no means no campaign when we have youth-on-youth violence, this study should be able to inform that. If we discover instead perhaps we have a terrible problem with incest, well, that's a much different problem to tackle. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of work in this regard myself and attending a lot of different programming we have in our state for adults working with children, for example, and how to deal with these issues and how we're dealing with these issues today. And, you know, there's some simple things that we can do for example, teaching not only children but adults what happens when somebody is trying to report, desperately trying to report, but that reporting falls on deaf ears. In an example, I heard from a teacher, an extremely distraught little girl came in saying, "Last night, Daddy ate my cookie." Extremely upset. Mm-hmm. Extremely upset. Well, the teacher responded, "Well, you know, it's just a cookie. We can get you another one. Come on." "No, you don't understand. Last night, Daddy ate my cookie." And it wasn't until actually years later, after the teacher had been through this training, that they began to understand what that student had been trying to report.
Yeah, it wasn't a cookie in the literal sense.
It wasn't a cookie in the literal sense. Okay. But, you know, having our ears and minds and hearts attuned to listening to these reports from children in the vernacular, or teaching children the right way to think about their bodies. You know, nobody should touch a child where their bathing suit would otherwise cover up. Or, you know, in ways that we can explain it to them that makes sense for their age group and their mind, but also gives them the tools that they need to protect themselves or to report if something awful has happened. There are ways that we can address this. But as I said, it might vary from crime to crime. And we also need to know, who is this happening to? Because how you'd approach it, for example, with a younger child might be very different with an older child. And we don't have the full results from the study. We expect them in May. But one of our preliminary numbers, and this number will change somewhat, but we believe somewhere around 12.46 years of age is the average age that one of our Indiana children, are assaulted, boys and girls. So that does inform how you might and when you might prepare students. But, you know, it's not a perfect science.
It sounds like, have we looked at, you know, we know Indiana is not doing this well, and that's an understatement, that Indiana, for whatever reason, has a horrible record. Have we looked at the states that do seem to be doing this well and ask the question, you know, what things are they doing differently than we are that might have an impact?
We are taking a look at that, and that will be a formal part of phase two of this study. But the sad fact is nobody's doing this well. Mm-hmm. The national average is more like 1 in 10 girls of high school age have been assaulted. So that's not a very good number either. Mm-hmm. I think Indiana can take the lead. This is going to be a unique study, the first of its kind, that should be able to inform a lot of different ways that we approach these kinds of crimes nationally. And in phase two of this study as well, we're pitching an idea to the ICJI to take a look at how emerging technology, social media platforms, et cetera, also play a role in these crimes, which is a new and different thing we're not prepared for.
We are talking about teen sexual assault with State Representative Christina Hale, who's made it a mission to try to deal with this problem. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So we're looking at other places now. Have we started looking at possibly innovative, you know, I'm assuming that ultimately the goal here is to try to find some way to intervene before the assault even takes place. It's not just about enforcement after the fact. We looked at places that might have some creative intervention programs.
We are, you know, and also different ways that schools and neighborhoods and communities can intervene before any of these kinds of things happen. But right now, that's almost a secondary issue, just because we have such a problem now with victims that have not yet connected with the services they need. So we have people that have never reported. And one good example of that would be Jenny Wendt. She was assaulted on the campus of IUPUI some years ago. The case has become infamous because her perpetrator reported 2 weeks after the statute of limitations ended. That she never reported in the first place. And she had been living with that all this time. And I really admire her because she's stepping up to try to inspire others to report. But we have so many that haven't. They suffer from emotional, physical, psychological issues, as well as PTSD, you know, other sorts of things that we want to make sure that we're connecting victims with the services they need today and then discovering more about how to prevent this from happening to victims in the future.
We are talking with Indiana Representative Christina Hale about her efforts to combat teen sexual assault here in the state. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Indiana's dismal record when it comes to preventing teen sexual assault. My guest is State Representative Christina Hale, a Democrat from Indianapolis, who has been prodding state government to confront this problem. We were talking really about models, ways that perhaps places that either have had some success in intervening or, you know, states that might have done a better job than Indiana has done in this regard. And I guess where I'd like to go, you were mentioning actually in the break here that some of it, this is a much more subtle and complex problem because the situation, the situations often are so distinctive. You know, it's one case if it's a couple of teenagers at a party. Another thing if in effect you've got a teacher in a school who is preying on his or her students. So, you know, could we talk a little bit about, you know, the different kinds of approaches if we were trying to build a sophisticated model for dealing with this? What are some ways can you give me an idea of what that model might look like?
That's a great question. Yes, and the answer is that for all of these crimes, we are going to need a customized approach. When you're dealing with family culture where incest is normal, and it's normal for the parents, the grandparents, the children, that is a complex set of problems. When you're dealing with something like human trafficking, and the average age for young people to be trafficked is about 13 years old. We have a terrible problem with this here in Indiana. In fact, on Backpage, we've had more than 90,000 posts a year of advertisements. Most of those people tend to be underage. So we're looking at creative approaches to prevent those kinds of crimes from happening. So you can take a look at reducing demand, reducing the market, and going after the person soliciting. But we also want to take a look at those websites and their business practices. How can we prevent them from posting images to sell children and traffic them in this way so we can penalize them? There's a problem also in adult entertainment clubs. It's oftentimes very profitable for these clubs to feature underage dancers. And there's not much that happens when it's discovered that you have a young 14-year-old girl dancing in one of these clubs. How do we disincent these clubs from putting these children up? And when you're a 14-year-old dancer in, I'll say, a sketchy adult venue, nothing good is going to happen from that. And it leads to these kinds of crimes. So how we prevent that, certainly starting with the family, but going to the business, perhaps if they're caught with underage dancers, the first offense, they lose their liquor license for a time, or, you know, finding ways to discover where the problems are. And hopefully this study will help us understand where the problems are, where the low-hanging fruit is, how we can change policy to encourage better behavior and to prevent these crimes from happening.
How much of this is... I'm trying to think how I want to phrase this question. I guess it's the backdrop. I can't remember which, but one of the Scandinavian countries I know has almost managed to eliminate prostitution by reversing the equation. Instead of dropping the preponderance of the punishment on the person who was offering sex for sale, they began punishing the people who purchased sex for sale. In other words, you know, in classic economic terms, they focused on the demand side rather than on the supply side, and found that, amazingly, after, you know, centuries of not being able to curb the sex trade, that they saw the rates drop by some phenomenal amount. Are there ways we could do that in this country and make it more, you know, the offense much greater for those who actually create the market that others try to step into?
Sure. And keep in mind, you know, some people think of something like prostitution as being a victimless crime. Well, the average age of death of sex workers in our country is 34 years old. This is a difficult, hard place to live. And stemming the demand side is certainly something we need to look at. It is complicated, as this entire problem is. A solution I've been working on has to do with property seizure. So, for example, if you have someone caught soliciting and they're using a car to do it, can you seize that car? Well, maybe you can. But what happens when that's the family vehicle and you've cut off that person's, I'll say, husband or wife from their means to get to their job, you know.
And the kids.
And the kids
to get
to school.
All of that, yeah.
So we're looking at that, trying to find creative ways. So what if you could seize the property, but there was a way, some sort of hardship factor a judge could consider to, you know, ensure that the partner left behind, the children left behind, that they're not unduly burdened by that sort of penalty. We also need to take a look at shifting our attitude toward the sex worker. Often they're trafficked. Often they don't want to be there. Often they're drug addicts. So we do need to think about them as victims in a lot of these crimes as well.
We are talking about teen sexual assault here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Margaret, welcome to the program. Oops. Margaret? We'll try to get Margaret back. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Carolyn. And Carolyn says, I wish our schools offered compulsory sex ed, that educated about consent and healthy sexuality. State Senator Jean Brough tried with a bill. I'm assuming with the tried, it means it did not move forward. Would that be a step in the right direction?
I think it certainly would. That's something so many people that work with victims are really pushing for. It makes a lot of sense. In terms of consent, we also need a definition for consent in Indiana and perhaps even nationally. In fact, IU just came out with somewhat of a definition of consent for assault that's happening on their campuses, but what we're going to find is a real lack of consistency, a lot of confusion. You know, we need to be able to train people to know what does consent look like so they can be very, very clear, because these situations, particularly in cases of date rape, are nebulous. I mean, mm-hmm. It's hard to negotiate if you don't know, and if you're coming from an unhealthy attitude, perhaps what has been normal to you and in your family culture might be somewhat violent or misogynistic in somebody else's. You might not be able to negotiate the law in those close quarters, those difficult moments, and a definition of consent would give greater clarity to everyone around our state.
What kind of, I mean, in broad terms, what kind of a definition of consent would you like to see in terms of Indiana law?
Certainly something that's been verbally affirmed, so that it's an affirmative consent. Somebody will have to be conscious, can't be intoxicated, et cetera, et cetera. Something that is worded well enough that it's clear to everybody what's okay and where that line is and what's not okay.
I think we've got Carolyn or Margaret back on the line. Margaret, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm the one who disconnected.
Okay. That's okay. It happens.
I just want to give a profound thank you, an expression of gratitude, first to Representative Hale for, not letting this go when she stumbled into it. Well, I'm not sure you stumbled into it, but when you first looked at this a couple of years ago, I just cannot tell you how critically important this is. And then to you, Mr. Cole, for having Representative Hale on the show. You've already mentioned it, and I don't want to go on and on and on, but part of the key, a major part of the key, is for people to hear this publicly discussed. It's been a terrible problem on campus. To witness it and try to bring it up and then be told shut down because certain parties, entities, don't want it to happen. My mom was accosted in the late 40s, early 50s at a very high level of important people, and she was threatened that they would that the guy would kill her husband, my father. And when she went to the doctor, a very well-regarded doctor, and this is in the early 50s, he said, "Well, that's just the way it is. You have to learn how to live with it." She told me this just a couple of months before her death in 1998. I was dumbfounded, and explains her major depression. She was in and out of the mental hospital. She said she was afraid to tell anyone when the doctor told her, "Well, it's just the way it is. You have to live with it." We've witnessed it on college campuses and as our daughter, who's now 26, going through elementary. And you try to talk to about it or raise it, and you just get shut down. Indiana has a culture. Our culture here in Indiana, I'm a fifth-generation Hoosier, I don't say this lightly, is that it's none of anybody else's business. You're just trying to make waves, or that, oh, it's just the way it is. So profoundly, thank you for continuing and your success in bringing it this far. And I hope I will work. I'm not in your district, but I'll sure come and work in your district for reelection. The state legislature needs to have this brought to their heads and for them not to be able to put their heads, sweep it under the carpet. Thank you.
Margaret, thank you very much for the call. And next time you call in, it's John. Okay? Okay. If you're friends with No Limits, you're friends with me. Okay, thank you.
Margaret, you're too kind. Thank you. And I just like to encourage other people. It's our citizen legislature. Maybe everyone should think about running. And, you know, I've certainly grabbed onto this issue, and I'm not going to let go. But we need more good, smart people in our state house. And I hope everyone just kind of thinks about that and what your role might be in government someday as well.
Margaret raises a point. What drew you to this issue? I mean, when you come to the state legislature and you're elected, obviously there are all sorts of issues that could confront you as a state representative, and we tend to forget, you know, elected officials are just human beings. They have the same 24 hours in the day that the rest of us do, so the demands on their time and attention are immense. Could you talk a little bit about the path that led you to making this a priority?
Sure. I'd been working many years for Kiwanis International, which is an NGO dedicated to children's issues located here in Indianapolis. Our global headquarters is here in Indianapolis. And issues regarding children have always been very near and dear to my heart. But in terms of why I ran for office and what that story is, you know, sometimes you just want things done differently. You don't just want different people doing them. And I at least wanted to change the public conversation about what was going on in Indiana, because we have high degree of poverty. You know, per capita income has been on the decline since 1962. We have more than 350,000 children that go hungry, or as some people say, suffer from food insecurity every day. And then 1 in 6 girls have been raped or sexually assaulted here in happy, wholesome Indiana. It just made my teeth hurt. And I thought, no, not on my watch. And I quit my job and knocked on 30,000 doors. And I decided I'm going to talk about this and at least get people thinking about it and put it in the forefront of our minds that, you know, in my mind, one of government's top jobs is providing for public safety, and our children in Indiana are not safe from sexual assault. That's not good enough. And I know a lot of people out there agree with me. So I just wanted to jump in and do something.
We are talking about confronting Indiana's teen sexual assault problem. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, as we say, you needed some help, obviously, to get the study commission going. You've continued with other bills that you're working on, other measures before this General Assembly that have had, you know, somewhat uneven success. We'll talk about that in a bit, but I guess I got to talk about the elephant in the room. I mean, the Indiana legislature, Indiana General Assembly on both sides, still in many ways is an old boys network. You know, how much of the resistance to dealing with that problem is a cultural one within the state legislature?
I think that's a fair observation. Certainly, when I've been talking about these issues, I have been pulled aside by some of my colleagues to say, well, you know, that number can't be true. You know, a lot of times these girls are lying. And, you know, I think they're just caught up in these old tropes, and they haven't really opened their eyes to what's actually happening today, because they grew up in nice families, haven't had these kinds of experiences. But I can tell you, you ask almost any young woman today, that's a real number, because everybody knows somebody that this has happened to. And it's a national problem, but it's especially bad here in Indiana.
What does your gut tell you about why it's worse here in Indiana? I mean, you've been looking at this really closely. You're probably one of the people most expert on it in the state. Why do you think it's worse here than elsewhere?
I know we value privacy here in Indiana. A lot of things are behind closed doors and have been happening for a long, long time. I believe we're going to be discovering, and it will be validated by our study, that almost always these crimes are committed by somebody, the victim knows, whether that's somebody in their family, all too often, their neighborhood, their community, their church, their school. These are small circles. And this isn't just youth on youth crime. There's a lot of adult on youth crime. And something that's happening now, new trends with emerging media, smartphones, you know, all different kinds of things. We are having problems that we never imagined today when some of my colleagues in the state house were growing up. And only 1 in 5 assembly members are women, mm-hmm. just as a side note. We're mm-hmm. not very diverse. We're not very diverse in age either or other factors. When they're growing up, when they imagined us safe in our beds at night as children, they didn't imagine that perpetrators could access us through these electronic portals at any time. They didn't imagine that a room full of prepubescent girls having a slumber party could be streaming live video to people pretending to be young girls, only encouraging them to become actors, producers, and distributors of their own child pornography as victims themselves. And we just haven't begun to address that as an assembly or even as a nation.
We are talking about a horrible problem, Indiana's record in regard to preventing teen sexual assault. My guest is State Representative Christina Hale, who has been trying to spur state government to deal with this. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking with State Representative Christina Hale about Indiana's record in regard to preventing teen sexual assault. I've gotten a fair number of calls and emails. I'm going to start with an email from a listener named Richard, who says, "While I respect the opinion of your guest, she is using very one-sided statistics. There's been a great deal of academic work suggesting that there are many sex workers who view their work as liberating and empowering. There are also many statistics that say many people work in sex work for short times and have little to no negative effects. There needs to be a significant differentiation between sexual assault and people who choose to work in sex work as a purposeful, conscious choice. Your guest is ignoring that difference."
That's a good point to bring up, and I just want to clarify my remarks, too, and I'm glad you called me on the carpet to this one, because it's important. When I'm talking about sex workers in this context, because we're talking about children as victims of sexual violence, I'm talking about children who are trafficked and are working in the sex trade. And the average age that they are first used in commercial sex is 12 to 14 years old. So, you know, while your remarks regarding adults might be very valid, I do want to restrict mine to children.
Okay. We are talking again about Indiana's record in regard to preventing teen sexual assault. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Al, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
That I think is part of the cause of this is a lack of people either being knowledgeable, being able to read. Indiana has 25% of its population that doesn't read, and I think part of that and not being able to look at the material that's out there, even when, you know, congressmen and senators and nationally there are people who are trying to talk about subjects, they're not typically people who are well-versed in the information, so even when they hear it, they're not used to the terms. A lot of the jargon is new. So I applaud what it is that you're trying to do, but I think like so many other things that people point to from parenting and schools and so forth, I think it's not just a lack of education, it's an inability to even get out and become educated on a lot of those things that really affect your own family.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Hal.
Yep. Christina. You're absolutely right. It's a steep, steep hill to climb. And we, you know, have this vision of Indiana as being such a wonderful place and a great place to raise children and to live your life and prosper. And much of that is true, but we do have our challenges. And, you know, I mentioned per capita income on the decline since 1962, household income on the decline since the early 2000s, our literacy rate, which is close to 25%, as you mentioned, other sorts of economic indicators. We are challenged. And it is time, really, to take a comprehensive look as to why do we have these third world problems here in Indiana, and to focus on what is truly important, what truly will make the greatest impact, and begin to think generationally long term. And not just, you know, for someone in my position, all too often legislators just want to survive the next term. So we might not
get through the cycle. Yeah.
We might make a very penny-wise, pound-foolish decision because it feels good in the moment, and it feels right in the moment, but it's absolutely wrong for the upcoming generations.
How much of this is I mean, it's almost as if a large portion of the problem would be pulled back if we could just, would be eliminated if we could just pull back the curtain and let a little bit of sunlight in. And, you know, perhaps reduce some of the shame and embarrassment that comes with reporting all of this.
There are many barriers to reporting. Sometimes for older young adults over 18, under 26, if they're still on their parents' insurance policy, for example, they won't go to the doctor and report or get the health care they need as a result of being assaulted because that statement of benefits goes right back to their mom and dad. And they're private, and they don't want to worry them. They don't want them to know, and they have their reasons to keep it to themselves. But, you know, that makes things tough, especially when you have these attendant issues you have to take care of after these assaults, and you have no recourse to get them done without outing yourself. how can we make it feel more comfortable to out yourself? A lot of people just want to pretend it never happened and avoid the drama, but that's one of the intents of this study, which is very unique, which is drilling down on the reasons why people don't report.
And I'm presuming also with the study, we're looking at reasons why people do this, too. I mean, we should separate the idea of you know, wanting to have sex with someone from wanting to sexually assault someone, that there's a difference between a decided difference between romance and rape here.
Or sexuality and violence. Yeah, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We are talking about Indiana's record in regard to preventing teen sexual assaults here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I, as a parent of both young boys and a daughter, I'm very much opposed to exploitation of children. It's an issue that whenever I hear about it, it just gets my blood boiling. I guess my comment about teen sexual assault in particular with a daughter that will be going off to college soon is with regard to college campuses. It seems to me that we maybe have gone too far in terms of having sort of these on-campus processes for addressing sexual assaults on campus, and I'm not sure that's getting the message across. And it occurs to me that maybe public policy ought to be that sexual assaults that occur on campus simply ought to be handled by the police and handled as a criminal matter, and let the criminal investigation process get to the bottom of it. And it seems to me that to the extent that sexual assault is very much often about the decisions that young men are making and the behaviors that they're engaging in, that you're going to get a pretty quick and radical change in male behavior on campuses if the consequence is, hey, you're going to find yourself arrested and having to defend yourself against criminal charges if you're not being very careful about how you engage with young women on campus. That's my comment.
Thanks very much for the call, Aaron. Christina.
Great points, Aaron. You know, I will again revisit that issue of an affirmative definition of consent that might be very helpful in these situations. I'd also like to raise awareness that a lot of these assaults are happening, same-gender assaults, mm-hmm. and that gets swept under the rug, but it happens, and it's difficult. So it's not always male perpetrators, and it's not always the classic situation we might imagine in our mind's eye. But there's also the difficulty, and I've done some work in partnership with the Commission for Higher Education here in Indiana and Congresswoman Susan Brooks's office about combating this, because, you know, the national average is 1 in 5 females at least have been assaulted on campus, which is just outrageous. But drilling down, what are those problems and how can we prevent? And the universities and colleges often find that they're in the awkward position that they have 2 students and they have an obligation to protect the rights of both of those students. And it makes things very difficult for them. A measure that I've proposed this year to try to begin, a small measure, to try to begin to address this, to make things better for victims, is that the victims' advocates on campus, they should be able to enjoy the privilege of confidentiality. Today in Indiana, if a victim reports to a victim's advocate, any sort of documentation of that assault becomes part of the public record and is admissible to court. Well, that's not very functional or beneficial all the time for the victim, because they might be relating details that this had been a boyfriend, they'd had intercourse previously, they had other sorts of details that might color their case in some prosecutors or other forms of authority in their eyes, when it's just not fair.
Well, and some of what, obviously, in the other parts of my life, I spend a fair amount of time on a college campus. One of the other arguments that I hear, too, is often in these cases, if there's not enough evidence to lead to a criminal conviction, and the preponderance of evidence is pretty high there. You have, you know, the bar you have to clear is pretty high to get a conviction. A college can take other disciplinary measures. They can say, okay, we may not be able to prove conclusively that you raped someone, but we can prove conclusively that you behaved badly and you violated our honor code. And that's enough. We can either, you know, we can establish some other penalties. We can suspend you or we can expel you, one or the other.
And sometimes our institutions of higher education, too, are, you know, they have to report these incidents, and they want to make sure that the parents of their future students think of their campuses as safe places. So they might not want to report or tell the full story because they don't have the full story, and or the story might not sound very good. It might sound a little scary. They have legal obligations and, you know, vulnerabilities, and it gets really complex really fast. But I'm very proud of our Indiana College and Universities. We actually had a gathering of more than 23 of them in, I believe, August or September of 2014, as organized by the Commission on Higher Education in partnership with myself and Congresswoman Brooks, to begin to have these tough conversations to say, hey, we all agree this can't go on. Hey, we all want to do the right thing. How do we, and what are these practical steps that we can take to make things better today? And I feel like we're beginning to make real progress there.
Henry, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks very
much. I got one of the most intelligent legislators in the Assembly speaking today. She's raised issues that I just have not been aware of. Where am I coming from? Well, my wife in her adolescence was assaulted by a family friend, abused over a period of time. And I keep hearing of these kinds of instances from friends old and young. And here in Indiana, I'm just not sure we get it. We have a General Assembly that, you know, I swear their motto is, if it's broke, don't fix it. What can we do to change some of these attitudes? You know, some of the things that come out of these people's mouths are just ludicrous in terms of awareness of what the problems are. And I'm sure Christine can provide all sorts of examples, although she's got to get along with these people. You know, we have a governor that's been described by people of his party as an empty suit. Again, if it's broke, don't fix it. Why don't we have a more progressive approach to these terrible problems? I have a darling granddaughter. She's 4 years old, beautiful, eloquent, and all the rest of it. And I worry for her future. So if Christina, if you could be a little more reassuring about the future to me, I surely would appreciate it. By the way, we look forward to having you speak to a group that for which I am the program chair here in the near future. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for the call, Henry, and please say to your wife that we're sorry that happened to her. Representative Hale.
Oh, thank you. That was very kind, and you raised some good points. I would have to say, you know, and remind the audience, Indiana, in our 2014 election cycle, we had the worst voter turnout of any other state in the nation. The worst. Fewer people turned out to vote here in Indiana than in any other state. Let's do something about that. Let's also turn over some of us in office that sit there and mold over time. Let's hit that refresh button sometimes. You know, and that includes myself. I'm not going to do this forever, but I'm here working on this now. And hopefully someday somebody's going to grab that baton from me and begin work as well. But once again, I just want to say to everyone, why not you? And what can you do? And what might your role in government be today? No matter what, you have a unique set of experiences, thoughts, things to contribute. So first, please make informed votes and be sure to vote and try to encourage as many of your friends and colleagues and neighbors on all sides of the aisle to get out and vote. And secondly, hey, our government's made up of regular people, and you've got something to say. You've got a great head on your shoulders. Why not think about what you can do to be part of this process and be part of our government and do something on your own?
We are again talking about combating teen sexual assault in Indiana. We're getting close on time, so I'm going to ask our callers to be very brief in framing their questions. Richard, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me on. I have a question for the representative. It's a little bit about unintended consequences. Since these crimes are rarely committed by strangers but by people that know each other, could there be an unintended consequence if we make the penalties too severe the reporting is less likely to happen.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Richard.
I think, Richard, you're right. I mean, there are all kinds of unintended consequences, in particular when these problems happen within families. You know, sometimes the breadwinner of the family has to be put behind bars. Sometimes families are broken up and children find themselves, wards of the state. Sometimes, all too often, we find that victims tend to be re-victimized. So I mentioned earlier that we have a terrible problem with sex trafficking of children in Indiana and around our country. Well, so many of these kids are runaways, and they're running away from really bad situations. And part of this problem is that their normal is that they've been victimized, and they go from one normal situation and flee to the next situation, which is truly awful and terrible, but it feels pretty normal to them. And we've let it get to such a degree that, you know, to hit the pause button is frankly virtually impossible. But over time, I believe we can develop better strategies to combat this. And hopefully someday we'll have more time to talk about it, to get drill down and be a little bit more specific.
Oh, we will have you back. We're going to continue this conversation. And I'd like to ask real quickly, because we do have a legislative session going on, are there measures right now before the General Assembly that if people do care about this, they should be calling and urging their representatives, their senators, to support?
We do. And if you contact me on Twitter, at Hail Indy, or on Facebook, facebook.com/sayhailyes, I can help you because the bill number, quite frankly, has just dropped out of my head. But I'm co-sponsoring a bill that basically just says, you know what, if you're a child molester and a felon, but you give your victim a sexually transmitted disease, well, you know what, we think that felony level should be amped up, and let's throw you behind bars for a little bit longer. Just not acceptable. I'm afraid this bill's not going to get a hearing. And just simple measures like that, you know, low-hanging fruit, let's tackle together. And your help as listeners, as voters, would be really tremendously impactful and appreciated.
And I assume we're going to have more results from the study in May, right?
Correct,
so
in
perhaps,
May.
And legislature will be out of session, so perhaps we could have you come back then and we'll talk a little bit about what the findings are.
I'd appreciate that.
Certainly. Well, we would appreciate having you. I'd like to thank my guest, State Representative Christina Hale, for what has been an informative conversation about combating teen sexual assault in Indiana. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.